How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now's your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Kim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're finally getting cool weather here in Missouri.
Oh, it's freezing. You can see your breath out. I love it.
I know. It's fantastic.
Finally.
How have you been? What's been up?
I've been dandy. You?
Been great. Been great.
We're just
I guess we can talk afterwards.
Full of lots of banter, are we, right
yes,
now?
Yes, we are. It's early on a Sunday morning and kind of exhausted, to be quite honest.
But shall we get on to it? I say we just dive right in. Let's do it.
All right. Before I start, I'd like to give a content warning to this episode. We're going to be dealing with sexual assault. So if this kind of content isn't good with your mental health, completely understand. And maybe you can sit this one out and come back.
We'll still be here.
We will.
Whether you like it or not.
In the early hours of September 13th, 2016, a woman that we will only know as Jane Doe loosened the clothes that were used to bind her hands and legs, found her captor's phone, and quietly dialed 911. When the 911 dispatcher answered, Jane Doe whispered she had been abducted. She gave her location and told them that she was lying next to the man who had taken her and held her hostage. When the dispatcher asked if she knew the name of her kidnapper, Jane Doe replied, Sean Great, and then described him as a white male, about 6'2", 175 pounds, with brown hair. Have you heard this 911 call?
No.
Ugh. Gives me the creeps. I will post the link to it. It's on YouTube. It's like 15 minutes long. As the 911 dispatch keeps Jane Doe on the line by asking her questions for a stress-filled 15 minutes, officers from the Ashland Police Department scrambled to find the caller. Jane Doe told the dispatcher where she was in the house and described how to get into the bedroom where she was being held captive. When asked if she was bleeding, Jane Doe softly cries and then whispered, not anymore. In the middle of the call, Jane Doe accidentally sets off a taser gun, causing her to panic and Great to wake and sit up. Terrified, Jane Doe remained quiet and waited until he went back to sleep. Later at trial, Jane would be asked what she was thinking when Great woke up. Quote, at least the 911, and then she started to kind of cry, and she said, at least they knew my name. Jane Doe asked the dispatcher how much longer until the police would arrive, and said that she was too afraid to leave for fear of waking Great up. Dispatch said the police are in the area. Once Jane can hear the officers, she feels confident enough to leave the room and go to the window. But the police don't see her. Thankfully, the police were able to get inside without waking Great, and then he was immediately arrested.
Was he drunk or something? Like, was he, or just really tired?
We'll talk about it later, but he would leave sometimes and go do drugs, I believe, or something, or drink, I don't know.
Okay, so he
was... And come back. Yeah. One of the first responding officers to the scene, Detective Kurt Dorsey, would later recall finding Jane Doe in the kitchen. Quote, the best way to describe her is complete and utter shock. She couldn't move. She just stared straight ahead. A face I'll never forget. and then at trial, Jane Doe would go into detail about what had happened to her. 38-year-old Jane Doe met Sean Great, who's 40, almost 2 months earlier at the Kroc Center in Ashland, Ohio. The Kroc Center is a community center and food pantry run by the Salvation Army and named after Ray Kroc, who is...
founder of McDonald's.
Yes, very good.
Thanks.
The McDonald's Corporation. He wasn't the founder of the actual restaurant. He just bought the restaurant for somebody and incorporated it all and chained it and all that kind of good stuff. But I digress. Anyway, although Sean showed interest in Jane Doe, she didn't return the feelings that he had for her. And she felt it was more of a platonic relationship. They would eat lunch together, go for walks, talk about the Bible, and sometimes play tennis at the park. Jane said, quote, "He was kind of like my brother. He was kind of goofy, but he struck me as kind." Now, Jane was really religious and very conservative. She enjoyed reading the Bible, painting, and playing guitar. And she never allowed men into her home because, quote, "it's just not a good idea." Mm. So not allowing men into the home, much less consent to sex outside of marriage. On September 11th, Great and Jane were out on a walk, and they stopped at the dollar store. There they saw a friend who gave them a ride back to Jane's place. And there she made them dinner of peanut butter sandwich, in which, when they ate, Sean stayed outside. Because why? She didn't allow men into her place. Great tells Jane that, like, "Hey, my mom and sister gave me this huge bag of clothes. Why don't you come to my place and I'll give them to you?" So they do. Once Jane stepped inside the house, it would be 2 days before she would be able to walk out. It started innocently enough. Jane read aloud from the Bible, and then suddenly, Great ripped the Bible from her hands and told her, quote, "You're not going anywhere." Sean's personality had completely changed. He had always been so easygoing, but now, with her, he was very angry and violent. The two fought. Jane recalled, quote, "I tried to push him away and get up, and I was doing everything, trying to kick, punch, but everything I did, he just did it so much harder." Sean hit Jane in the head and face. He then choked her until she stopped struggling and complied. Jane Doe said that Sean Great sexually assaulted her in every way imaginable over the next 2 days. He would tie her up and give her pills, which he said that they were muscle relaxers. And that was the only thing he did give her. In fact, she had nothing to eat the entire time she was there. At least 3 separate times, he bound her to the bed and applied makeup on her face, which was pretty much to cover up the split lips and the bruises to her face. He then would put duct tape over her mouth before he assaulted her. Sometimes he would even video record the assault on his phone. Great always kept a close eye on her, and she was too afraid to even think about escaping. Great left the house a few times, and when he did, he made sure to tie her up in a way that if she tried to escape, she would strangle herself. Mm. When he would return, Great, quote, got high and started sexually attacking Jane. Every hour she spent in that house, she was abused. He even, quote, marked her by shaving a heart into her pubic hair. She was physically, sexually, and mentally tortured the entire 2 days. After being freed of her captor, Jane Doe was taken to the hospital and given a sexual assault forensics exam by Lisa Riley. Riley, a nurse at University Hospital Samaritan's Medical Center, which is a really long thing to say, said that Jane Doe was, quote, fearful and nervous, and she rocked back and forth during her exam. She was terrified, just terrified. Jane had cuts and bruises throughout her body, along with head and vaginal injuries. Once the exam was over and Jane Doe was able to shower, Lisa Riley gave her a razor so she could shave off the heart Great had left. Ugh. That's just an insult. Demeaning. As Jane was being taken to the hospital, police walked through the house where she was kept. In the downstairs room, they saw restraints fashioned out of clothing on the bed and on a chair. To the upstairs bedroom, there was evidence that someone had been tied to a sofa. And then when they went in the basement, police found the remains of two other humans.
Really?
Mm-hmm. At the police station, after Sean was arrested, he was interviewed by Captain David Lay, who was leading the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation. As it so happened, Captain Lay had been looking for Jane Doe before he even knew that she'd been kidnapped. He'd wanted to speak to her about a missing woman by the name of Elizabeth Griffith. Sean Great admitted to squatting in the house on 363 Covert Court. He said he really cared about Jane Doe and that the two had planned to get married, and jokingly said that he only kidnapped her and tied her down on the mattress because it was the only way he could get her to stay with him for a few days. Because, quote, "She stays at home and hides with her Bible all the time. Honey, if you have to tie her down, she's not yours."
Yeah, no kidding.
Sean Great even said that even though Jane didn't believe in premarital sex, he did have sex with her, and it, quote, "ended up that she just didn't like it, and she was beating herself up about it." Captain Lay said it looked as though Great had beaten her up. And Sean Great explained that what he did was completely out of character, and that he did hit her, and that actually he had cuts on his knuckles from one of her teeth. When he hit her, her teeth cut his knuckles. When asked if he had sex with Jane against her will, Great responded that yes, he had. And Captain Lay asked him what that was called. And Sean replied, rape. So he knew what he did was wrong.
He knew, yeah.
Police Detective Kim Major then took over the interview. Great admitted that he did abduct and rape Jane while he held her against her will in his bedroom. Great admitted that he did abduct and rape Jane Doe while he held her against her will in his bedroom. The interview then turned to the disappearance of Elizabeth Griffith, a woman who had gone missing about a month earlier. Captain Lay knew that Sean had known Elizabeth, and after denying any knowledge of Elizabeth's whereabouts, Great finally stated that Elizabeth had been, quote, set free. When Detective Major pried further and asked where Elizabeth was, Great answered, quote, "in the house where I came from." Elizabeth Griffith was a 29-year-old woman from Ashland, Ohio, who suffered from schizophrenia. She was last heard from on August 16, 2016. Like Jane Doe, Elizabeth had met Sean at the Croc Center. Jane had known Elizabeth and recalled her being sweet but childlike, and had said that Elizabeth would talk about her mental health when first meeting anyone, and that would have easily led to her being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. According to Great, Elizabeth invited him into her apartment. They talked and played Yahtzee. After the game of Yahtzee, they went to 363 Covert Court, ate barbecued chicken, and then Elizabeth returned to her apartment. At about 11 o'clock that evening, she called Great again and asked if he wanted to play some more Yahtzee and maybe talk some more. She was lonely and wanted a friend. They went back to Covert Court, where Elizabeth said she just kind of wanted to check the house out, see where Sean was living. They went upstairs to the bedroom, and Sean stood behind Elizabeth and strangled her. Great has denied having sex with her, but Great had removed all of Elizabeth's clothing after killing her and hogtied her just in case she did wake up. He then hid her body in a closet in the upstairs bedroom in the abandoned house on August 17th. Great also said that he entered Elizabeth's apartment a week later and destroyed the Yahtzee score sheet that had had his name on it, and then he stole some small items in her house. Sean Great would later give an interview to 19 News where he talked about murdering Elizabeth. He was a talker. He loved to talk to the news. Quote, "I'm trying to justify it as compassion. The short time I talked to her, she cried several times. Just about life and how she couldn't find anyone to love her. She had a mental illness. All I wanted to do was show Elizabeth that she wanted to live. I'd say, give me a hug. We're all in this together. I'd choke her until she said she wanted to live. And she just didn't."
Hey, if that's what he's telling himself.
His story would always change, so who knows?
He's not mentally okay.
When Detective Major asked if there was any more bodies in the house, Sean answered yes, there was one more in the basement. Stacy Sandley, otherwise known as Stacy Hicks, was a 43-year-old mother and grandmother who had been reporting missing just the week before. Sean had met Stacy at the gas station when she had had a flat tire. Sean said, quote, "We started hanging out. She came in and everything was fine and we started kissing. Then, Great forced Stacy to have oral sex and he tried to videotape it with his cell phone. Great said that Stacy then, quote, wanted to play the innocent thing. So he then just kind of snapped. Well, he snapped because Stacy took out her can of mace to spray him, and that's when he strangled her. Afterward, Great wrapped up her body, dragged her to the basement, and covered her body with trash. Great would admit to taking over $40 from her purse and driving her car around town. After she was died, I guess I didn't have to mention that, but yeah.
He is like making up reasons to justify what he's doing.
So with the search warrant in hand, police descend on the house. It's 363 Covert Court. Inside one of the upstairs bedrooms was a stripped-down bed with restraints made from clothing stolen from a donation bin attached to the mattress. There was a pole propped up against the wall with a sock and a layer of condoms wrapped around it. Now, I believe that was a homemade sex toy, maybe, possibly. Just thinking.
Oh.
Police also found a rocking chair, stuffed animals. In front of the closet that had been taped with black duct tape lay a pile of clothes with a swarm of fly larvae in it. And the police said the smell was deplorable. When the closet was opened, more piles of clothes and more flies were found. Looking under the clothes, police found the heavily decomposed body of Elizabeth Griffith. In the basement, beneath bags of trash and wrapped in a blanket, was Stacy Stanley. Her skirt had been pulled up over her waist and her underwear had been removed. Inside the house, police also found Stacy's car keys, a stun gun, and brass knuckles. So after Great confessed to killing Elizabeth and Stacy, he asked Detective Major, quote, "How many people before I get the lethal injection?" And then he told detectives about a third body. Candace Cunningham was a 29-year-old woman from Mansfield who had had a relationship with Great. They had lived together in a rental home and were engaged, as what she told her mother, or told people, I should say. They lived together in a rental home and they were engaged. And people that knew the two said that they were inseparable, although they did fight a lot. Great concurred that they did fight, and he also claimed that Candace was suicidal. He killed her in June of 2016. Candace's family knew that she was in a relationship with someone, but they never knew the name of the man that she was seeing. The last time Candace had spoken with her mother was just a few months earlier. Candace had told her that she was going to be moving to North Carolina, so it would be a while before she would be in touch. So basically, Candace was never reported missing because her parents didn't know. In fact, it was a surprise when the police knocked on her mother's door asking if she knew where Candace was, because they believed that the body they had found in this wooded area was her daughter. Great also confessed that in January of 2015, he strangled Rebecca Lacey after he caught her stealing $40 from him. He strangled her and stuffed her body in a large, hard plastic golf bag, then took her into the basement of a vacant building where he was living. He left her body there for about a day and a half until he was able to borrow a car to dump her body in an area that she would later be found in March. The original cause of death was a drug overdose, but due to Great's confession, they reopened her case.
So she was on murder. Drugs, right? And then he killed her, but they thought that she had just OD'd?
She was a sex worker and she was addicted to drugs. Yes. So they found her body. Her body was found and they immediately thought, I mean, she had drugs in her system. Hmm. And they just thought she'd overdosed. Well, she was also acquaintance of Sean's. That was proof that they did know each other. And they didn't even suspect that he had killed anybody, that he had killed her at all until he just confessed and said, oh, yeah, by the way, Rebecca Lacey, I killed her. I caught her stealing $40 from me. So I strangled her. Sean Great also confessed to a murder of a woman in May of 2006, whose skeletal remains were found by a man walking his dog in a field on March 10th, 2007. And this would be what they think is his first victim. He claimed that this woman had been a magazine salesman and her magazine saleswoman, and her name was either Dana or Diane. And she had sold his mother a subscription, a magazine subscription that she never received. And his mother was very upset, which made him very upset. One day, he saw this woman walking down the street, and he told her that he was interested in buying more magazines. He somehow coaxed her into the car and took her back into his house. And there, he killed her in the basement by choking and stabbing her in the throat. He kept her body in the house for 2 days before he wrapped her body in a sheet and dumped her body. And he later came back and set fire to everything to get rid of the evidence. But in June 2019, through the DNA Doe Project, Sean Great's first victim was identified as 23-year-old Dana Lowry. She was from Louisiana, and she was, in fact, working as a magazine saleswoman after she and her husband separated. She left behind two daughters who, at the time of her death, were only 1 and 5 years old. Her family had reported her missing after she quit calling home in May of 2006. Let's talk about the monster that is Sean Great, shall we? Sean Great was born in Marion, Ohio. I believe it's Marion, Ohio. August 8th, 1976. His parents divorced when he was 6 years old, and like most kids of divorce, especially at the time, he lived with his mother. Not a lot of information is available about his childhood, which is kind of funny because the guy likes to talk. But it is known that his half-sister cared for him a lot until he was 16 because his mom was gone an awful lot. And since juvenile records are always sealed, there's nothing. Like, we don't know if he was in trouble with the police or anything, so we can just skip to age 18. And at 18, he was arrested for assaulting his girlfriend. Great had been convicted of everything from burglary to assault. He was convicted of felony assault when he broke into a 17-year-old girlfriend's house with a butcher knife and hid under her couch, ready to pounce. This was in 1999. He's been in and out of jail constantly until, like, January of 2003. In his mid-20s, Sean would sink into these deep depressions and his behavior would become erratic. Many women found him charming. His own mother told the Daily Mail, quote, "Yes, he's good looking, but the devil's good looking too."
That's a good quote.
"He ain't no red horns and all that stuff. You find out he's charming, and of course, that charm can charm the pants off anybody." Sean was a master of manipulation, and he took advantage of his good looks. And he always took advantage of people, and especially those that he was able to get money from. He was kind of a...
asshole?
Con man, kind of. Like, he could manipulate women into giving him money, and stuff. He didn't have to work, and yeah. Mm-hmm. He had 3 children between the 90s and 2012, and each child had a different mother. But each one had called the police on him due to violence they experienced with him.
Interesting.
In 2005, he began seeing Christina Hildreth. The relationship lasted 5 or 6 years, and she said it started off really good, but as time started to go by, he started to change. And actually, there's an episode of Evil Lives Here. I think it's season 8, episode 2. That is just all of Christina talking about him. And she describes how he just seemed to become paranoid. And he was very controlling and physically and emotionally abusive. Mm-hmm. And she tried for years to escape. She just tried to get out of the relationship, but she couldn't do it. She wasn't able to. Until one night, Christina and Great had this huge fight that she ended up with a broken hand. So he took her to the hospital. While Sean was still in the room, and why the doctor did this, I had no idea. But while Sean was still in the room, the doctor asked if Sean was the one that broke her hand. Now, of course, Christina is going to deny it because, you know, he's in the room.
Yeah.
But they asked Sean to leave. And the doctor's like, listen, we already know it's him. With your bruises, we know it's him. So Christina did say that it was Sean. So they called the police. But as soon as Sean sees the police, he leaves.
Oh, yeah. I would have thought he would have left when they asked him to leave, knowing happened.
He takes off and the police can't find him. And he just disappears. Nobody can find him. So Christina is staying with friends. And finally, she has to go back into the house that they share to get some clothes. So, of course, she goes by herself, which is number one. Don't do that.
Mm-mm.
And all of a sudden, he's inside the house and he attacks her. He had like slipped in through a back window or something. And he tries to drag her into the bedroom and she just knows he's going to try to kill her. And finally, the neighbors heard screams and the police came and he's at the door and she's like, no, it's fine. He's not here. I mean, it's horrifying. So finally, after the police leaves, she's able to calm him down and say, listen, okay, I'm going to help you escape. Police know you're here. They're looking for you. I'm going to help you escape. Meet me in the woods in 20 minutes. He falls for it. He goes to the woods. She doesn't pick him up. Instead, she goes to the police, tells him where Great's at. And then he was arrested on domestic violence charges and sentenced to 120 days in prison, where, according to Christina, he stews.
Oh.
And he like plots revenge for her. She even like meets up with a guy that was a cellmate of his. And he goes, wait, you're Christina. You need to get out of here.
Wow.
Yeah. You should definitely watch it. It's really creepy. He's absolutely terrifying. And Christina also talks about how when she first goes into the house where Sean was, that he has her clean up, which she now thinks is the blood of Dana Lowry.
Oh.
The guy is a creepy son bitch. That's all I'm going to tell you. Creepy son bitch.
To say the least, I would say. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, in 2011, he gets married and has a kid. I don't want to say her name because she says she's completely done with being
connected
to him. She doesn't want to be connected. Gets married and she pretty much has the first of his 3 kids. And the marriage only lasts for a year. And she divorces him, and then, of course, she has to file a restraining order against him. Mm. So back to present now. In October of 2016, while Sean awaiting trial, Great wrote a letter to News 5 Cleveland explaining his motives for killing all these women.
He is a chatty little Kathy, isn't he?
He is. He believed government assistance had taken the minds of these women. He said, quote, they were already dead. Just their bodies were flopping wherever they can flop, but their minds were already dead.
Mm-hmm.
The state took their minds once they started receiving their monthly checks.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot find this article, but I swear one of the ones I read, they asked him if he had any other questions, something else that he wanted to say. Can't find this article, and I'm going to keep looking for it. But the last thing he said was, yeah, my cellmate's crazy. And I've got to find it. I read it somewhere and I forgot to mark it because I remember thinking, are you looking in the mirror, Sean? Yeah.
I was going to say, hello, pot, meet kettle.
Exactly. But I'm going to try to find that. And of course, if I do, I'll put it in the show notes. Great was arraigned on murder charges in the Ashley County Court after being indicted on 23 charges, including murder, aggravated murder, rape, and kidnapping, for the murders of Stacy Stanley and Elizabeth Griffiths, and the kidnap and rape of Jane Doe. Great initially pleaded not guilty, but was openly speaking to the media about his crimes. He gladly would tell anybody that would listen what he did. But no, I'm not guilty when it came to the courts.
Mm-mm, no.
His trial began on April 23rd, 2018, and the prosecutor, Chris Tunnell, addressed the jury in his opening statements and told them, quote, "This is not a whodunit case. This is a he done it case." Jane Doe took the stand and testified for almost 2 hours, and you can watch it all on YouTube. In fact, I think you can watch the entire trial on YouTube. And Jane's testimony is horrifying. I'll post a link in the show notes, but it's, you know, don't listen if your mental health is in jeopardy. I'm telling you again, it's
terrible.
She's a strong woman. That's all I got to say. The family and victims of Stacy and Elizabeth also testified, along with all the police officers and detectives who had interviewed Great after his arrest. Sean Great changed his plea to guilty for the 15 charges on May 2nd and was found guilty on all counts on May 7th. He was sentenced to death with the initial execution date set for September 13th, 2018. But that got a stay because he had still to be tried for the murders of Rebecca, Candace, and Dana. On March 1st, 2019, Great pled guilty to the murders of Rebecca Lacey and Candace Cunningham in Richland County and was sentenced to life in prison without parole for the murders and 17 to life for the other charges running consecutively. Now, kind of strange, but when they read his sentencing for Rebecca Lacey, Rebecca's family doesn't really believe that Sean killed her. They believe that it was Rebecca's dealer that killed her. So
really?
As soon as they read the statement of charges or whenever they pronounced him guilty, mm-hmm. the family got up and walked out.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. And on September 11th, 2019, Sean would stand trial for his first victim, Dana Lowry. He pleaded guilty to kidnap, aggravated murder, and gross abuse of a corpse, and he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. And in February of 2021, Sean appointed a new attorney, Elizabeth Eric, from Lexington, Kentucky, and she filed an application to reopen his death penalty case. But the Ohio Supreme Court denied the application, and sorry, he's still sentenced to die. But as we know, the death penalty cases that we have here in the States, it may never be carried out. And if it does, it will take years, decades even, for it to happen. But as of right now, he's right where he belongs. Thanks to the very brave woman we will only ever know as Jane Doe.
Bless her heart, man.
Whew. She saved countless lives.
I thought he was dead. I thought they executed him. So Mm-mm. they didn't. He's still alive, huh?
He's still there. He's still hanging on. I think he's now medicated, which might give him a little bit more clarity.
Mm-hmm. Wonder what his mom says. Like, what his mom thinks.
I don't know. Like, I really suggest people watch That Evil Lives Here. That was the only show I could find on him.
Mm-hmm.
But Christina talks about, like, he never really talked about anything. His past, his mother, anything. And then one time he met his mother and his mom kept saying, well, have you noticed any of the mood changes? And she would like never go into it. So like they knew at a young age that there was something wrong with him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But yeah, besides the one interview where she said the quote about the devil and everything, she hasn't spoken about him at all or anything. I think that was her only interview she ever gave.
I can't believe, and I always wonder about this too, how a lot of these killers get a wife or a girlfriend, and they may be abusive to them, but they don't kill them. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. just weird.
Well, watch That Evil Lives Here episode. They like show her a picture of him in prison. You know, he's in his gear, mm-hmm. and he's got this like little smirky smile.
Mm-hmm. I know
and
the picture.
She goes, yeah, that's him. She said that he would like to hurt her and then take photos of what he did to her. That was like, he would kind of get off on that. Yeah. And it's, yeah, just, he's something. I'm telling you.
He needs to go.
He's right where he belongs. He doesn't need to go nowhere, no how, no place.
No, I mean,
place.
He needs to go. Like, oh. The big sleep. You know what I'm saying?
He's...
See you, bye-bye.
I don't know. But then you get to think, okay, if he would have been medicated, if he would have stopped, would that have helped him? Could this have happened if he would have gotten the right
medicated?
Help?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah. And we probably
possibly
won't.
And probably. You know, the problem is you have to continue to take your medicine. And that's the problem with mentally ill folks. They feel better and then they quit taking it.
I mean, once he started talking, he talked nonstop. He even showed people how he strangled the women. He went into detail about everything. He just, it was almost like somebody was dying.
He liked calling newspapers and things too. The news.
Oh, yeah. Writing the news and telling
them. But I did not. I'm going to plead not guilty.
Right.
I'm going to plead not guilty.
Yeah.
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 All right, buddy.
He's something. Let me tell you.
Something is not the word I choose, but yes, I agree. Horrible is what that is. Let me tell you.
Let's do a little happy thing. Have you been watching anything lately on TV?
You're so cute. Okay, so I finished Midnight Mass yesterday, which
loved
was
it.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
You liked it a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started watching Only Murders in the Building.
Yep, love it.
That was this morning. That was cute. I like the feel of it. It's kind of campy, which I like.
I love Justin Martin Short's character. I love
Bieber
that.
Bieber documentary.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm watching TikToks about a cat by the name of Justin Bieber. Mm. The cat actually talks.
Oh.
Like the little buttons that he presses to tell when he wants
like
things.
The dog? Like Bunny the dog?
Like Bunny the dog, yep. But it's a cat by the name of Justin Bieber. It's a great big
Bonnie.
Orange cat.
Is Bonnie
cute
the dog?
Bunny.
Yeah.
Bunny.
Bunny the dog is named Bunny, right?
Uh-huh.
Not Bonnie? Yeah.
Bunny has a new brother by the name of Otto, I think.
Aw.
Otto? Yeah.
Hmm. Cute.
Mm-hmm.
That's what about you? What have you been watching?
Midnight Mass. I watched that. That was pretty. And Only Murders in the Building. I'm all caught up on that. Midnight Mass. Scariest thing about it was the zealot woman.
It's true, right?
Another thing that made me really upset is I was like, God, who's playing that kid's father? Who's playing that adult man's father? And then I'm like, shit, that's Henry Thomas. That's Elliot from E.T. Elliot's not allowed to get that old. And that kind of upset me.
Yep. Yeah. Did you watch Squid Games?
No, my husband and daughter did, and they love it. Actually, we're going to make those little candies that they have that they have to etch out. We're going to make that sometime this week. My daughter wants to make those.
It was, it was good. I liked it.
Yeah.
I did like it.
It's pretty much Battle Royale, the movie Battle Royale, which I liked a lot. For just some reason, there was something about Squid Games that I
couldn't get into.
Just couldn't get into. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I liked it.
But I know that my husband and everything loved it. And my husband just finished up all five seasons of Billionaires.
Mm. Yep, I like that show too.
Which he totally loved.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I love
can't
Damian
get him
Lewis.
To quit.
Yep.
Can't
Paul
get
Giamatti.
Him to stop talking about it. I love Paul Giamatti. Love Paul Giamatti. I think he's an amazing actor.
Well, you should watch that. Did you watch it? It's good.
No, and I probably won't because my husband loved it so much. Then he keeps talking about it and keeps telling me that I need to watch it. So I probably will never watch it.
Don't watch it. It's pretty good, though. It is pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I heard. But other than that, I've just been researching and writing for our 12 Nightmares Before Christmas that we're trying to get done.
I concur. This is episode one recording today of how many we have? Five? Something like that? Six? I don't know. Something crazy.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah. So you ready for Halloween?
I haven't even thought about it yet.
It's almost
my daughter's already gone through two costumes. We've bought two different costume ideas for her, and she's now decided she's not doing either of them. So we're going for our third.
Okay. And you know what? You know what? After the good people hear this episode, you know what the next day is? Thursday. Do you know what Thursday is, Jen?
No idea.
It is your birthday. It is Jen's birthday.
I know. And yesterday was yours.
Yeah. But see, mine's gone now. And now we talk about yours.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But anyway, my daughter's funny. She's going to dress up to be her and all of her friends were going to be fairies. And then she decided she wasn't going to do it. So then she decided she was going to do some kind of clown. Wanted to do some kind of creepy clown.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's like, I don't want to do any of those. And I'm like, okay, what do you want to do? And she goes, it's either between, I either want to be an astronaut or Jesus. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Uh-huh. All right. Well,
so we'll see. Well,
you know, that's
telling you.
Yeah, I'd say so. Well, good. I'm glad. I love her. I think she cracks me up, but we already knew that.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, Jen, I think that's it. We're going to wrap up so we can keep going.
We do,
keep
but doing this, hey, you know what?
What?
We haven't been playing promos.
We have not.
And we do have a new promo by our really sweet man, one of the sweetest men in podcasting, our friend people. Mike Morford.
Sweetest people.
He's one of the sweetest people, but he's also one of the sweetest men.
I know, but if you say people, it's just, you know, it's everybody. So okay. Super nice. You
You're
know what I'm saying.
Being inclusive, I understand.
Yeah, it's just everybody.
But Mike Morford, or Morph, as everybody knows him, for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be playing all of his shows. Today is Murder in the Family. And have you ever listened to Murder in the Family?
I have. It's good.
It's so good. He does such a great job dealing with, or speaking, I should say, interviewing these members, family members of people who have been murdered. And he's a top-notch kind of guy, you know?
I just don't understand how he has so many shows and we only have one and we can barely do it.
I know. It's because he's magic. Mike is magic, I promise.
I guess. Well, I think we need some of that magic.
He is. He's really, he's one of the good ones. So if you haven't listened to Murder of the Family or honestly any of his shows, you really need to do it. Anyway.
But until then, you can listen to a promo that's going to play here.
Exactly. After we finish all this off.
That's right.
Anyway, stay tuned to listen for it.
Hey, Jen, you know what? Until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at wetalkofdreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.
My name is Mike Morford. Some of you may know me as co-host of the podcast Criminology. I'd like to tell you about a solo podcast that I host, which is very close to my heart. It's called The Murder in My Family. We've all heard about horrible murder cases in the news, both solved and unsolved. Most of the time, we listen for a moment and then go about our daily routine. But have you ever wondered who those murder victims were? Or thought about their backgrounds? They're more than a blurb in the news or a statistic. They were real people living real lives. They were someone's child, parent, sibling, or friend. In The Murder of My Family, I try to get to know those victims with the help of the people that knew them best, their family members. Together, we talk about the lives and tragic deaths of their loved ones, as well as the ripple effect the murders had on surviving friends and family. Some of the episodes feature high-profile cases you're probably familiar with, like the Colonial Parkway murders, the Delphi murders, or the Golden State Killer murders. But many other cases are ones from small towns all over America that barely made the news. There are dozens of episodes of The Murder of My Family available right now to binge on. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.